Okay, we're back with Marcus Ashworth, his chief market strategist for Haitong Securities. Good morning, Marcus. How are you?
Good morning. Very well.
Right. A lot of excitement on Friday with the Bank of Japan lowering rates to what, -0.1%, something like that.
Yeah, they're going to staggering their. So it's only for new deposits, and it's a very careful way of making sure the banks don't go to excess cash and. But you know the point is they're going negative, which is something which Kuroda said he wouldn't do only about a week or two ago at Davos. So,
right, obviously he'd been taking too much of the brandy from whatever
the blue vine or something.
Exactly. Yes. I think the thing about that is that you know they sort of now seem to be in the game of defending a level on dollar yen.
Well, this is quite clearly it, and that provokes the obvious response: is what on earth is China going to do in reaction to it? You know, 10-year JGB yields are at 6 basis points. Now we whinge and moan and worry about bunts at 32 odd basis points, and it's interesting to see Treasuries way higher, still fairly close to 2%. But what is going on if the whole complex of Japanese bonds have gone essentially negative? Even 5 years are negative 9%. 25% of all global government bonds are now negative. This is not, we thought we were coming out of this. We thought we had manufacturing booms. It's turning into recession. We are seeing the Fed just hiked rates in December, and now the rest of the world is going the other way. This is pretty nerve-wracking stuff. And, you know, what Kuroda's doing is essentially that. He is defending the yen against a certain level, and he's said every other meeting for the Bank of Japan for now on is live, which means he's got more to do. And that must provoke a response, one would imagine, from the People's Bank of China, you know, who devalued and scared the market at the start of this year. What's the chances now that they have to almost do the same thing again?
Yeah, but won't the hedge funds do it for them? Because, I mean, you're reading in the fine publication like City AM that the hedge funds are going short of... everything really, but I mean all the emerging market currencies, but especially the China one.
Yeah, Carl Bass and Heyman Capital and Soros, etc., all implying. Soros actually didn't say he was, but he said we were watching and they
warned him not to.
Well, they did indeed. Very
great. I love that.
Very seriously, but I mean the point is that they can close down as much as they can with domestic banks, but they're finding it hard enough to control their own domestic banks, let alone the foreign speculators who understandably are taking serious umbrage at certain types of numbers and certain types of approaches that are going through. So the question is that do we think that the People's Bank of China were pushed into their initial move to devalue because of what the Japanese have been doing? And I think there is something in that. It's not the whole story, far from it. It's about currency outflow. But they're seeing their competitors in the local region, particularly the Japanese, effectively controlling their currency. And it is logical, therefore, that the Chinese, as they separate, you know, the IMF basket, whatever, they're now becoming an independent currency. That means their currency should float either up or down. In this context, current economic environment, the logical route for the yuan or renminbi is lower, and weaker. And that's something which they've said very clearly they won't do, but there'll come a point where they'll almost have to because of the currency outflows, again, which we wait for. Later this week, we'll see the FX reserves and see how much they've had to spend, for January. The number in December was anywhere between 150 to 200 billion, depending on how you look at it. Possibly the same again. Obviously, we saw what happened in January. So there is big outflows coming from China, and that's something which you know we all have to keep a very close eye on.
Yeah, but that's the thing, isn't it? Just this is a capital flight situation. Anybody with money in China is taking it out. So you don't even need the hedge funds.
It's not all that, because quite a lot of it, you know, logically, if you're a Chinese manufacturer and you've got debts in dollars. And you see that you know your home currency is weakening. You need to pay those dollar debts down. So some of it's quite a benign influence. You're right. Paying back your debts due overseas, and that's necessarily a function of world trade, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Of course, there are also quite a lot of flows where it is simply get me out of the currency, get me into somewhere else. More importantly, the other effect is that a lot of Chinese manufacturers with their sales overseas are keeping their dollars and euros and whatever maybe overseas rather than repatriating them to yuan. So that's it exacerbates the effect.
So how's it all going to end? In tears or...?
Well, I mean, quite evidently, the next focus is on Mayor Draghi, and he's going to have to respond in like, and perhaps you know do a further negative deposit rate, possibly also tiering the deposit like the Japanese have done. And that prompts the next round of Beggar Thy Neighbour, because in essence, we see several large blocks needing to weaken their currency and keep that trend of a weakening currency to sustain their export markets. We look at the South Korean numbers, exports down 18.5% year on year. They're the ones that are getting squished between the might of the People's Bank of China and the Bank of Japan, and they are suffering very badly. So, you know, we will see this. It's going to go around for a little bit more. We have clearly the bond markets and certain bond markets in particular have taken serious fright here and are very worried about negative rates and prospects of disinflation leading to deflation.
Well, let's get a little bit nearer to home. I always enjoy the Mark Carney show and
on
his
Thursday,
predictions and that sort of thing. 140 on cable is like the line in the sand. I mean, if that goes, from a chartist point of view, there's nothing there for, till 110, really. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that's not going to happen easily or quickly, but there is that sort of rumour of, potentially the next move on UK rates is down rather than up, and they do this nutcase strategy of having negative rates, or they're forced into that situation. What's your view on the way?
I don't see that we're quite in the same boat. UK is going to be a follower here rather than the leader, and I don't see that the inflation report can be anywhere near as dovish as perhaps the market is expecting it to be. I mean, effectively, we're looking at the first rate hike to be not for 2 years, and indeed, we got Haldane, obviously the chief economist, having muted the prospect the next move might be lower. He's not opined that recently, so I would see the inflation report is unlikely to fill anything like the market's current dovish expectations. The gilt yields dropped quite dramatically on Friday, far more than other markets, including Treasuries, did. So in that sense, I think the market's a little bit ahead of itself, expecting the Bank of England to do anything particular. Whatever their inflation forecasts are, likely we'll see with the ECB, these are going to be lower, and the market, I think, has fully priced that in.
So basically, the Bank of England are just looking at over their shoulder at the ECB and the Fed.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a risk that the Bank of England might be a little bit more worried still about inflation than perhaps the market is expecting to be, and less worried about disinflation or deflation than some people are panicking about.
Right, non-farm payrolls on Friday. I think our good friend Bill Hubbard's looking for 210 or something like that, which would be another good number. The threat seems to be that there's good US data and then they will be able to raise rates again. That seems to be the worst thing for the market.
Yeah, well, we've got to look at two things. Obviously, wage inflation, we saw the employment cost index in quarter four. That was only at 0.6. It's very consistent. There's no real wage inflation pressure coming through. The last payroll number was very strong, much stronger than the market expected, and perhaps I think is at risk of a revision downwards.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be too surprised if we see a weaker number than 200,000 this particular month. Now, it doesn't mean that the unemployment rate can't still drop below 5%, but I think with some of the jobless claims numbers that came through in the middle of January, we have had a real impact from very benign winter, which dramatically ended towards the end of January. How much that's fed through to the payroll numbers is probably limited, but I would still think that there is a chance, either this month or probably next month, that there is a bit of a correction lower to payroll gain. Doesn't alter the story. It's still enough payroll gains for the Fed to still think it can be on a hiking pace. Other factors have completely changed that, but as far as employment and housing are super strong in the US economy, that is going to, I think, calm down. At the same time, the weakness in manufacturing, I think, is probably over, and the inventory destocking, again, is probably over. So I think the counterbalance, where the strong things are going to moderate and some of the very weak things in the US economy are going to start to pick back up from it being on its knees. So net, we're still looking at maybe 2% growth for this quarter.
Okay, so modest all around. Marcus Ashworth, Chief Market Strategist for Haitong Securities. Thanks for coming today.
Pleasure.